Paso. Crema.
Marcel gets the ball from Jake O'Donnell at 7. Set it for. Here comes the play. Marcel lobs it underneath. Starting up the three. Ball picked up by Schneer. Shoots it. No good.
From Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on the sunny shores of beautiful Lake Erie.
Rebound knocked up in the air, slapped by Mills, out to Brandon. Brandon coming to the forecourt. Brandon with three, with two, on the run. Good! He beat the buzzer! Cavs win!
In downtown Cleveland.
Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!
You've tuned in to Wine and Gold Radio.
Mitchell again. Shoots. Good! Cavaliers lead. No timeouts. Ball lobbed. Ball knocked away. Game's over. Cavaliers have won it in four overtimes.
Now, here are your hosts, Rafa, J-Mike, and Joe G.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, hey, everybody. Yeah, hey, and welcome to Wine and Gold Radio.
Wine and Gold Radio.
I am Joe G, and today's show, I will be the dumbest member of all the...
Why?
Because we're going to be talking to a bunch of intelligent people on this show, you and John Michael. Rafa Hernandez Brito, one of my co-hosts. What kind of degree do you have, Rafa?
What kind of what?
Degree.
I have a mechanical engineering degree with a specialization on machine design.
Okay. John Michael. John Michael, Juan Miguel is also joining me. John, what's your degree?
I, too, have a mechanical engineering undergrad degree.
Yeah. Undergrad. Either way, it's getting higher now. Now I'm joining you on the dumb list. And now we keep going.
I was trying to avoid having to say the other.
Do it again. Go ahead, John.
Go ahead. Mechanical engineering.
And?
I do have a law degree, and I do have an MBA degree. All of which I'm using each and every day.
So
somebody who watches basketball for a living. Yeah.
I am the least bright person on this show. However, I did get my degree from Concrete State University, which is now in the field of 64.
All right.
They'll be taking on Houston later this week.
Yours is the only alma mater that's in the tournament. So there you go.
I feel kind of good about that. So I feel kind of good
Dame,
about
not
that.
Close. BU.
Nope.
Never close.
Do you guys ever make the tournament?
Yeah, we did. Rick Pitino took us there.
Really?
And Rick Pitino just took another school now to the final, to the tournament. Iona, I think it's his fifth school.
He did. And you're Boston U, correct?
BU.
The Terriers?
Yes.
Howard Stern? Correct.
Of course, WBUR. Okay. Well, that was the first station that he got fired from on the air.
Okay.
WBUR. But he took BU, Providence.
Louisville,
Kentucky, and now Iona.
Yeah, pretty amazing. I mean, he's an amazing coach, but
pretty amazing that he still has a job after everything. that's the thing.
Okay, guys, we're going to be talking a lot of March Madness on today's show because part of today's show is going to be about Women's History Month. We're going to have Lindsay Gottlieb, who coached in the Final Four, Cavs assistant coach, and we're also going to have Alyssa Dombrowski on the show.
Guest co-host.
To celebrate exactly.
Women's Month.
Exactly. So, of course, we're going to talk a lot about that. But I have to start out and say, if the season ended today, the Cavs would be on the outside looking of the playoff picture. They have a homestand coming up. They lost their rhythm coming out of the All-Star break. They have not found their rhythm.
It's a rough start. And I want to ask you guys that know basketball a lot more than I do, how much does it have to do the big layoff put together with the way we went into the break? And, you know, coming back, I think we faced New Orleans that had already played the night before, so they were kind of in a rhythm, even though they were on a back-to-back. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it, obviously we haven't played well in spurts, and for the type of team that we are, we can't afford to do that. But how much does it have to do with that, John, you think? Because you have to take that into consideration.
We talked about this on a previous episode. During the slide that took place before the Cavs won four of their last five heading into the break, we would have loved a 9-day layoff, right? I mean, the Cavs were dying for one of those. Then they start playing well. The Indiana game, the Cavs let that one slip away, the final game before the break. But sure, that break always takes a toll. But, I think it's across the league, obviously. But you're right, Rafa. They always say the game after the break is typically an ugly one in case of the Cavaliers in New Orleans. So I think part of it, though, I think to a bigger extent, it's getting players back in the lineup, which is good. But, you know, now you're again assimilating. Jimmy Bickerstaff has been juggling the whole season, right? And finally you're getting whole again, yet there's still that chemistry issue that you have to, you know, we'd all know about the limited practice time. We know that this season is different than any other, which means that teams are making adjustments on the fly and at times actually in games. So there are combinations out there on the floor that haven't been out there. You know, you get Kevin Love back in the lineup for the first time since December to open up the second half of the season. You got Larry Nance back after an extended absence, and things are different. So guys are, once again, shifting roles. And for a younger team, that's not always the easiest thing to do. So does that layoff have an effect? Of course. But I think maybe equally as important, maybe more importantly, the roster continues to shift for this Cavs team. Now, the good news is they're almost whole, right? I mean, they're at least trending in the right direction in terms of getting most of their players back on the floor. So we'll see. You know, a lot of games in a short period of time. So if you turn it around and catch a streak, it can mean good things in a short period, like I said. So we'll see. Looking forward to the game in Miami coming up, which has not been an easy place to play, much like New Orleans for the Cavs. But then a four-game homestand starts on St. Patrick's Day against Boston, and we'll see if the Cavs, first of all, hopefully can get a win and do something against the Miami team that, by the way, is playing some really,
really good.
Good.
Yeah. Think about it
now, but they are shooting up the charts. Hopefully the Cavs can get healthy at home on that four-game home streak.
We lost 10 in a row. Then we find a way to – JB, find a way to keep the guys together, mm-hmm. win 4 or 5, go into the break. And then once we had those 4 or 5 were with the same lineup. For the first time in the season, we had the same lineup in 5 games in a row. Mm-hmm. And now, because we're getting healthy, he has to come in and with Love and Nance, Love in minute restrictions. So it's really difficult. It's not an excuse, and I'm sure exactly. Nobody's putting it as an excuse, but it is a factor, I think, of what's happening.
I think, too, the loss of Darius Garland mm-hmm. can't be overlooked. You know, you look at that Indiana game, the Cavs had a seemingly comfortable lead when he goes out. The next 5 quarters without Darius were not pretty at all. You know, he didn't play in that New Orleans game. Comes back in the lineup in Atlanta. We see what he can do in terms of getting this team organized. But again, he's dealing with different pieces. So another factor for Cavs backcourt that's had players in and out. And again, hopefully for the second half, they can be mostly whole and see what they can do here in half number 2.
No, I completely agree. And that, you know, of course, when you hear you're getting Larry Nance and Kevin Love back in the lineup, first thing you think is, oh, that's fantastic. And it is, but you're right, especially without Darius Garland in that first game back. You have to kind of readjust and recalibrate your entire system. So, I mean, and there's a domino effect, too. Yep. So, again, no excuse, but the Cavs, basketball is a rhythm game, and the Cavs need to rediscover their rhythm.
And there are still things that I'm sure JB may mention. It's like the things that they can do better, like the free throws, for example. It's something that they have to take ownership to that. But there's a lot of factors, and I think the good thing is we're coming home after the Miami mm-hmm. game, and the schedule doesn't get any easier. Right now, it's easier to figure out what days we don't play than trying to figure out what days we play. Because I think it's like four days off in the next, you know, 10, 14 days.
Yeah, this schedule is going to be rough. Well, we'll get an inside look at the locker room, how it was how it was over the weekend, and what we have to look forward to this week, and also a little bit of March Madness when we talk to Lindsey Gottlieb and Alyssa Dombrowski coming up after the break. We will be right back on Wine and Gold Radio.
Wine and Gold Radio. I got to sing another song.
Hi, this is Tim Elkhorn. I listen to a lot of different things, but I never listen to Wine and Gold Radio.
There's more of this.
Folks, this is a garbage spectacular.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
Designed from the land, for the land, the Team Shop has introduced a new in-house apparel line called the Land Collective. The first series is inspired by the 2020 NBA Draft. Each series will focus on a specific theme and feature exclusive pieces that will only be available while supplies last. Get these new looks from the Team Shop today only at Cavs.com/shop. For more style inspiration and to be the first to know about upcoming collections, follow @Land Collective on Instagram.
Hi, this is Jed Osmond from Turkey, and you're listening to Wine and Gold Radio, Cleveland, Ohio, America.
6 seconds to go. Clemens gets the ball. Clem to Bingo. Bobby, top of the key. 25-footer. Bingo! Bobby hit it.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Wine and Gold Radio.
Joe G, and I'm joined, of course, by Rafa Hernandez Brito.
That's me.
John Michael, Juan Miguel. And our special guests, this is, of course, Women's History Month.
Correct.
And Wednesday is Women Who Rock Night at the Fieldhouse. Yes.
And our guest co-host and our guests are women who rock, for sure.
Indeed. Oh, my God, they rock. So our guests, basketball communications coordinator, correct?
Director? Please.
Oh, yeah, let's make her a director for the show. Alyssa Dombrowski, who deserves a raise just for being Dave Dombrowski's daughter and putting up with that all the time.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. Hi, guys.
And Cavaliers assistant coach Lindsay Gottlieb. You talk about a woman who rocked. There we go right there. Lindsay, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Do I get a Spanish pronunciation of my name or no?
I'm going to let Rafa do that one. Yeah. He's the pro on that.
You know, it's bad because it doesn't have an R. And we have talked about in the show how people roll the R's even when they're not supposed to roll them. So, but for me, your last name is it took me some practice because the B at the end, the Gottlieb, it was always hard. When I was learning English, I had problems with – I missed the class where the B and the V are pronounced differently. So it took me a few years to get that part correct.
Hey, before we talk to Lindsay, you heard a little Joe Tate coming out of the break. We're paying tribute to the great Joe Tate on today's show. Alyssa, obviously your dad knew Joe the entire time he was here. You probably knew Joe from when you were a little baby. Do you have any good stories from Joe Tate or just any memories of Joe?
Yeah, I mean, my dad has been with the Cavs. He's the vice president of broadcasting. Obviously, he's been with the Cavs for about 35 plus years. So I really grew up around the Cavs, obviously, which inspired my path that I'm on now. But Joe was such a huge part of that, of my childhood. You know, I would say my biggest memory of him, and I don't know why it was Bob Evans. I don't know if that was his favorite or my dad's favorite, but I used to, we would go to Bob Evans with Joe for breakfast on Sundays. And I just felt like the coolest kid on the block, being able to, you know, just be in the presence of such a legend. And, you know, he was obviously just such a presence to be around. And so it was really cool being able to just be like in his orbit and just know him. And, you know, he obviously is very, very missed by all of us, but definitely awesome memories that I'll never forget.
It's been a really hard week for me because I'm sure Coach Lindsay is in the same boat as I am. We just came here to Cleveland, and of course, I never got a chance to meet Joe Tate, but it's amazing to hear the stories on how many lives he touched and how much, back in the day when there was no TV, that's how people connected to the Cavaliers. And it's amazing, Lindsay. I'm sure you've been really impressed by how everybody has come out and talk about the amazing impact that Joe Tate had in their life with the Cavaliers.
I was actually just thinking the same thing. You know, I obviously just got to Cleveland just under 2 years ago, but I listen to the sports talk radio when I drive in to work, and I try to be a fan of all the teams and really immerse myself in Cleveland culture, and hearing the genuine feelings that so many people had for this legendary announcer, to me, speaks to the sports culture of Cleveland and how connected everyone really is by these sports teams and how the voice of it all really matters. And it's really neat to see the former players talk about him as well as fans and other people in sports media. So again, I sending out condolences to his friends and family, but also I think, gosh, if we could all be remembered in such a way, that says a lot about him and also about the community.
Lindsay, you grew up, sports were such a big part of your life, you know, as you rose and came to where you are right now. Were there voices or a team that was your team or your voice that you listened to when you were in those formative years?
Well, yeah, I was all Yankees and Knicks, right? So Walt Clyde Frazier has been the voice of the Knicks for a very long time. So it's one of those moments, you know, when I saw him in Madison Square Garden, and apparently, like, when we last time we played in New York, I never watched the broadcast, but someone said, you know, he gave me a shout out on the, you know, on the broadcast from being a local kid, you know, back, you know, now coaching in the Garden. That was really cool. And then the Yankees announcers, one thing to me, I wrote a letter to Susan Waldman, who was on the Fan, one of the first women to do it. So, you know, back when I was a kid, I, you know, maybe getting a little bit older, saying, you know, I think you're great. You know, can I come shadow you? Can I do something? And I have a letter that she wrote me back. So I'd say those are the two people that made the most impact, you know, on me in the New York area.
You mentioned shadowing. Did you ever have the itch? Did you ever think that that might be your career path?
Yeah. Well, when I was growing up, our dinner table conversations were about somebody's case, because I grew up around a bunch of lawyers. So there was a lot of that, or sports. And so if you had asked me when I was probably, you know, 10, 11, 12, I think I would have said that I either wanted to be a lawyer or in sports broadcasting or writing. Like, to me, that's what I thought there was to do, to be, you know, a part of sports. It wasn't until I got into high school and college where I was like, wait a second, people coach for a living? Like, you can really do this? And so that's when I shifted more to wanting to kind of impact the game and the people involved in the game in that way. But who knows, maybe somewhere down the road, who knows?
Now, you mentioned you come from a family of lawyers, and do you happen to get a little bit of like a question mark when you decided and you let everybody know that you were following the sports, the coaching side? Because, you know, John is an attorney as well and also an engineer. I have an engineering degree. And at the beginning, when I started pursuing my passion, it wasn't really like something like, yeah, good move. Go ahead, go get it. So I wasn't for you.
I mean, I was almost the opposite. I think I'm the youngest of four. My older sister is now a law professor, but she went to law school. My brother went to law school. You know, my dad, my uncle, my cousins. I think people were refreshed and excited for me that I was following my passion. And one great story is that, so my father, you know, before he passed away, was a judge. And whenever I could, when I would come home while I was coaching, I would go into the courtroom with him and just sit and watch. And the people that he worked with, the court clerk, the stenographer, you know, the people they shared chambers with, the other judges, you know, they would always like come over to me on the side and say, you know, I know your sister's a lawyer doing big things and your brother, but he talks about your job the most. They would always make a point of saying that he was so into my teams. And so I'm very grateful to both my parents, actually, that they never said, oh, you know, you're a girl, you should do this and you shouldn't do that. And they certainly never said, you know, you need to go to law school. They really encouraged all of us just to follow what we were passionate about, which I think is, you know, that's what leads to fulfillment and happiness more than anything.
All the lawyers knew. They're like, this is the smart one. She's not going to be miserable like we are. This one's got it figured out.
Do you use some of your lawyer skills, or at least some of what you learned around the dinner table, with players?
So the most, I don't have a degree in psychology, but clearly the academia field that is most relevant, I would say, is, you know, being able to kind of access some psychology in terms of dealing with people, but also just like, you know, a good, well-rounded sort of education, the way you think about the world, the way you see the world. And I took some incredibly stimulating and interesting classes at Brown where I went that was my formative time when I was like, I think I wanted to go into coaching. And I related everything to team dynamics, right? So I'm studying, you know, political theory and Rousseau and the notion of the social contract. And in my mind, I'm writing a paper where I'm thinking about how does that apply to a basketball team, right? And, you know, giving up the you know, your own self-interest for the greater interest of the team. So I was kind of a nerd in that way. But yes, I felt like there were a lot of opportunities to pull in, you know, the ways of thinking about the world into team building. And to this day, that's one of the things I find really interesting, that being able to read things from different coaches and different sports and what can you pull, or business leaders, and how do you, you know, just continue to get better at your craft beyond the X's and O's.
You talked about Susan Waldman. And Rafa and I were talking about this yesterday, and that, you know, of course, it's Women's History Month. And, you know, Rafa and I are a little older. Years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I don't want to say there weren't women to look up to in sports, but women in sports were not there. It wasn't as prevalent as it was now. Who did you look up to growing up?
That's a great question. I can't, you know, say that there was, you know, a woman working in sports to me saying that's who I want to be. I think that obviously the biggest influence on me was that I had people around me, an older brother, my dad, my mom, just essentially never putting a limit on what I could do, right? I just never heard you can't do that. And I think that's the most important thing. In terms of, you know, looking up to people, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be the shortstop for the New York Yankees. Certainly I wasn't looking at, you know, a girl doing that, you know, in front of me. And then as you start to think about college basketball, I do remember watching my first ever women's basketball Final Four on TV, and it was Dawn Staley and Jennifer Azey for Stanford and some of those players. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, there's college basketball out here that's really exciting. And so to see how far that's come, where now on a weekend you can turn on and, you know, there are 10 women's games on. There's still not enough, and it's still not on the major networks, you know, and that's, you know, still progress to be made there. But how far women's athletics at the collegiate and the pro level have come is, you know, no WNBA when I was really young. And if there was, I would have been at every game, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Cause I was going to watch every basketball game I could. I was going to watch high school boys, college men's, women's, like, I just loved the game. And to me, it had always been sort of the fluidity of whether it was pro or college or men's or women's. To me, it was just basketball. So the more women's basketball I would have seen earlier, I think I would have had more people directly to look up to.
And speaking of the WNBA, we got to send a big shout out for the 25th anniversary coming up for the WNBA. But what we were talking about, Lindsay and Alyssa, I think is, you know, I believe a lot of it has to do with the way society was made, was the, you know, all these years, about how women did, according to what everybody thought, didn't belong here or belong there. But I think that's the biggest task for everybody, not just for women, but also for men, for society as a whole, to make sure we change that view of thinking, the view of seeing life, about how women belong in the bench, women belong in the communications department, and you guys belong to a group here at the Cavaliers organization that is called Empower. And I think the most amazing part about that is to be able to expose little girls coming behind you that there is a place for them at anything they feel they have a passion for. And to me, that's the most important thing now that we have made strides into having women doing different things and excelling at them. But do you agree with me that is the most important part, to make sure that we expose these little ladies, little women coming behind, that there is a room, a space for them on whatever their passion is?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, 100%. You know, the Empower group is something that we're still kind of working on formulating, you know, what are our main objectives here? And I think, you know, aside from highlighting the incredible women that we have in our organization, a huge part of what we are doing and will continue to do in the future involves mentorship and reaching out to the communities and showing young girls that there is a place for you here. In any department. And I know this is something Lindsay has talked about so much, you know, if you want to be a coach, you can be a coach. If you want to be in the front office, you can be in the front office. And there's so many different opportunities, you know, and I think that that's so great. I remember, you know, when I was younger, and Joe G, you know, Tora Vinci was a longtime member of the Cavs PR department. And to me, when I was in middle and high school, she was the coolest woman in the world. I wanted to be her. I wanted to follow in her footsteps, because it was just so cool to me to see someone like me doing, you know, what I wanted to do. And I think having that visibility and, you know, I shadowed Tora, and she was so welcoming to me. And I think that, you know, that's something that I know as I go through my career, I look for that guidance still from people like Lindsay. And I also, you know, really try to pass that on too, whether it be to women in college studying sports or young girls. I think it's just so huge. And I'm really proud of the work that we've done so far with Empower, which, huge shout out to Lindsay, because she's such a leader in that sphere for us too, along with Angel Gray and our youth sports team, and just the women we have across the board on the business side too. It's just really, really awesome to see. And on top of that, how supported we are by men and women in the company. You know, it's not just us cheering for ourselves. It's really everybody getting behind and understanding the importance of having the diversity and having both males and females in these positions.
I think it's just difficult. You guys are so much better than men and everything, basically.
I mean,
that might have something to do with it.
I wasn't gonna say that.
But I think the exposure is huge, Lindsay. In your case, you are a little more in the front of that than everybody else in the company. But just the fact that women and girls can realize that you can work for the Cavaliers and you don't necessarily have to be on the bench, right?
Right. Right. And I would say it's women and girls, and it's little boys too.
Yeah.
Understanding it's just as important for them to see women in all places that, they want to be. That's how you make real change. Coaching in college for so long, part of my mission, part of the job as a coach is to get these 18 to 22 year olds sort of ready and have the most tools for whatever's next. And so I would have conversations with them. And this would be any, I think, people at that age saying, okay, like, what do you like to do? All right, you like marketing, you like math, but you also like sports. You know there are jobs, right, in sports that match up with your skill set. And I think that a lot of them just didn't know that. So representation is really important, because the more that girls see, oh, you know, there's a woman on the bench, but I might want, and then suddenly ages. Just part of move from of young women that I'm leaving, right? You can imagine. It's just, but what I told them is ultimately this type of move is so that when you guys are, you know, deep into your career, there's nothing that you can't do. So, you know, whether you want to be a GM or you want to be a VP of business operations, or whether you want to coach, this idea that, you know, women are visible parts of organizations will only allow the people coming up just to have that be the norm. And that's what I think is bigger than just ourselves.
I mean, we talk about how things have changed, you know, again, the WNBA 25 years now, but just recently, you know, Lindsay, and you're obviously a living example of women coaching professional men. That is probably in the last maybe 5 years, probably less than 10 years. What kind of, and again, I've asked you this question before, but what was that adjustment like? What was that changing gears like from dealing with women to dealing with these grown dudes?
So a lot of change for me over the last year, from, you know, moving from the West Coast to the East Coast, going from college to the pros, going from being a head coach to being an assistant, and from women to men. And on the surface, like, that's the biggest change, right? The physical, like the look, the feel of, you know, these guys compared to the women. But ultimately, I think the things that are most meaningful in coaching transcend gender. And that is, elite athletes want you to know what you're talking about, right? The guys on our team are too smart. You can't fool them, right? So you really have to know what you're talking about. You have to study your craft. They want to know that you can make them better. But then they also want to know that you care about them more than just the transactional things, right? That you care about them as a human being. And so those things, I think, that's what female elite athletes want, and that's what male elite athletes want. And that part has been, you know, the more natural thing. But there are times where I'm like, you know, I look around after 3 days and I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen another female. And, you know, there are times obviously when it's very clear that I'm in a men's locker room. Like, it just, you know, there's some things that just look and feel and sound different. But at the end, that's what diversity is, right? That you become comfortable in those spaces and they become comfortable, you know, with you. And, you know, what I've said to people is that I didn't come to the NBA, you know, to pretend that I'm a man or be just exactly like the guys. I want to be treated with respect and I want to be valued for what I can bring. But part of being valued is the recognition that I have had different experiences. I've had different life experiences and I've had different coaching experiences. And that's what I think, you know, that's what I was hired for, you know, to adapt to the NBA, but also to bring my kind of unique background and hopefully add value.
Lindsay, I'm going to ask my wild card question. If these guys aren't going to jump in, I'm going to ask you my wild card.
I was going to say, go to your question, because when we knew we were going to have you on the show, I told Joe, I said, listen, let's make sure we come out with something different, because I'm sure Lindsay has been doing these interviews all month long, and it's been the same questions over and over. And we're kind of different, Lindsay, just so you know. So this is the question that we have planned for you.
Well, I mean,
I have no idea what's coming.
Well, in the next segment, we're all going to talk about our playing careers a little to an extent. And Lindsay, I mean, this is not a woman's question. This is a coach question. Whoever the next assistant coach was going to get this question. I was thinking this, and I'm wondering, all of us, when we played sports, when we went in for the halftime locker room, at some point, I imagine all of us got reamed out by the coach. Not individually, although that's happened as well, but the team just got torn apart. I mean, I remember a coach in football broke his hand on the blackboard at halftime. That's how crazy coaches went at halftime. What are halftimes like, or I guess in college, in pros, do guys still get yelled at? Do teams still get yelled at? Does the coach lose his temper? What happens? You know, people want to know what happens in the locker room. Does JB ever come in and just tear the guys up?
So you're asking me this question on a very interesting day.
sorry, I forgot.
I'm following our loss at Atlanta last night. If you asked any single guy on the team, might have been the most mad I've ever seen JB last night at halftime. Okay. So, to the point where, you know, after halftime coming out, I was, you know, grabbing our young guards going, we're okay. Like we're gonna be all right. So is the question, do NBA coaches get mad? I think across the board, right? One of the biggest differences in college and the NBA, and obviously I'm generalizing because not every college coach is the same and not every NBA coach is the same, but the idea in the pros, it's got to be more of like a partnership, right? Like, you know, it's these are professional adults and you're kind of working with them. And obviously you're the coach, you're the leader, you're trying to do things, do it dictatorial kind of way. You just can't. And even college, I think that's not the most effective way anymore. But college basketball, you know, the coach is the longest lasting part of the institution. You know, the coach is synonymous. The players come and go, but you know, the Krzyzewskis and the Izzos and the, you know, they're there for, you know, the Calipari's, they're there for longer. So I think there is a little bit more control. But I think the art of coaching is being able to get guys or women to a, you know, greater heights without, you know, demeaning, without, most people don't respond that well to yelling all the time. They don't want to be kind of beaten down, but you got to have that artistry of when do you need to get on them? When do you need to, you know, build the relationship? But I think what JB does an incredible job of is he's grounded in the relationships all the time, right? He's always teaching. He's always caring about them. He's always meeting them kind of where they're at so that when he, you know, when he is like, come on now, you know, and can get on them, they respect that and they respond to that because they're not wondering, you know, who is this guy and what is he about? They already know that. So I would say, you know, he gets mad once in a while, but not without, you know, merit and certainly not without, you know, the calming influence that he has, you know, 90% of the time.
My question is this, and this is where I thought Joe was going. What was the biggest Lindsey Gottlieb halftime?
That was next.
Either with the Bears or the Gauchos. I mean, all the way back, all time. What, I mean, throwing Gatorade coolers. I mean, what was the biggest Lindsey time?
So I've never thrown a Gatorade cooler. If you ask any of my college teammates, the greatest memory in the history of Brown Women's basketball is when I got the shooting shirts thrown in my face by our coach, who doesn't remember that moment, but she was actually angry with somebody else and threw some shooting shirts and they veered off and you know, I'm like the freshman who's, you know, staying late every day and doing every rep and whatever. And all of a sudden I have these sweaty shooting shirts running down my face. But as for me, again, if you had some of my players on here, no crazy tirades, nothing like that, but they knew, like, I never, you know, like cursed at anybody or swore at anybody. But when I was, you know, for emphasis, using some choice words, they always appreciated that. But I would say the most mad I ever got, and we were talking about this and what came up, you know, the officials are the officials. We all get mad at the officials. You know, your own team's your own team. They can frustrate you at times. But if somebody else comes after one of your players, that's when you see this, you know, other side of you come out, the mom instinct, whatever. So the only time I did not get a lot of technicals over the course of my career, but I got thrown out of a game in Hawaii. two technicals very quickly because our point guard, Brittany Boyd, I felt took a shot that was a little bit outside the lines. And I thought the official was not, not protecting her enough. So I lost my mind and watched the end of the game from the locker room.
Oh, I thought you said from the swimming pool, from the hotel.
Yeah, from the beach. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I was like, smart.
I thought about doing that.
Yeah. I think
I've only ever seen you calm and collected, so that's a very interesting visual too.
Yeah, we're not going to get you that film. Don't worry. That's buried. And I know the one person who's got it, and I'm tough.
So just so we get it.
No one gets that film.
Just so we understand, you're telling us that JB turned himself into Bernie Bickerstaff last night after the game? Because when I was growing up watching basketball, I always thought Bernie Bickerstaff was just this person. I thought he was always angry. And then I met him, and he's the sweetest guy. He's the sweetest dude.
I only know nice, calm.
But he, you know, with his three-piece suit and the beer, and he looked like nobody wanted to mess with him, right? Yeah. And then I met him now. Every time I talk to him, he's always laughs and everything. But I always thought he was like this tough guy on the bench.
He's a teddy bear.
Yeah.
And a Browns fan, by the way.
Oh, is he?
Yes, that's right.
All right.
Lindsay, can you stick around for one more segment? And Alyssa, I should say.
You're on? All right.
We'll do one more segment on Wine and Gold Radio. We'll be back with our special guests, Lindsay Gottlieb and Alyssa Dombrowski.
This is Jared Allen, center for the Cavs. I listen to a lot of things every day, but it's never Wine and Gold Radio.
There's more of this.
20-footer for the win. He got it. He got it.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
Designed from the land, for the land, the Team Shop has introduced a new in-house apparel line called the Land Collective. The first series is inspired by the 2020 NBA Draft. Each series will focus on a specific theme and feature exclusive pieces that will only be available while supplies last. Get these new looks from the Team Shop today only at Cavs.com/shop. For more style inspiration and to be the first to know about upcoming collections, follow at Land Collective on Instagram.
Hi, I'm Angel Gray with Fox Sports Ohio. I am the sideline reporter for the Cavs, and on my free time, I make sure that I don't listen to... What is this podcast again?
Guanico Radio.
Guanico Radio. Let me do it again. Hi, my name is Angel Gray with Fox Sports Ohio, the sideline reporter for the Cavs, and I make sure to never listen to the Wine and Gold Radio, ever, like ever.
The Cavaliers are leading by 3, 114 to 111. Mills will again try to inbound the ball at center floor near side. Hot Rod steals the ball down the floor. Wham with two hands.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hallelujah.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wine and Gold Radio. Rafa Hernandez Brito, Juan Miguel, and our two special guests, Alyssa Dombrowski and assistant coach, Cavs assistant coach, Lindsay Gottlieb for Women's History Month.
Women's History Month. And I got again, going back to like different questions that you have been facing this month, Coach Lindsay, you know, I'm going to be calling my fourth Final Four this coming April. But also for the first year, I'm going to be working something with the Women's Final Four. And Powerade believes that no matter the sport, or level of play, because they wanted to include me, an athlete's number is part of their identity, right? Power in numbers, and every number has a story. And my friend Marcus Rivero, who is Souls by Sir, you know, the guy that paints the shoes for the athletes, he's actually painting a ball, a basketball, for every single lady that goes into the Final Four. And with their number and their colors. I have one made because if they wanted to include me, even though I'll be in Indianapolis, not in San Antonio, I have one made with number 15, which is my number. I always loved Thurman Munson when I first watched the first game in baseball, and I didn't know what a strike or a ball or an inning was, but I saw this guy struggling to get back on his feet to put his gear back on. And I said, you know, this game got to be amazing if this dude loves it so much to, like, sacrifice so much. So I always wore 15. And the number and the ball are in Michigan colors, of course, Mason Blue. Sorry, Alyssa. And I wanted
to...
He has
no actual allegiance to Michigan. He just does it to be
strong. And I wanted to ask you, Coach, I know when we have a Women Who Rock night, your jersey is going to be one of the items for sale at the team shop. And you chose number 3. Is there a story behind that number for you?
So I think it's a really cool idea. You know, one of the things I think about the NCAA tournament beyond, like, you know, the exciting basketball, it's the compelling stories of these young people who this is, for a lot of them, the pinnacle of their athletic experience. So, like, how cool to get a story, you know, for each young woman, you know, who's going to the Final Four. That's really neat. You know, from my time in college, again, going to the Final Four, to me, what I remember is the story of each kid on that team. Like, that's what's really neat. For me, I think it's incredibly awesome that the Cavs, you know, made a jersey with my name on it and number. Like, I'm just still blown away by that. But I chose number 3 because that was my mother's favorite number. I wore 3 on various teams that I was on. But more so, you know, I think I've told this story before, but my mom passed away when I was 19 and a sophomore in college. So she hasn't seen anything, you know, in the physical presence of what I've done, you know, with my life, my career. But I would say to anyone, you know, she was the original kind of badass, right? Like, she was just a modern, you know, woman who was all about her kids, but also had a career and really just made us feel like we could do anything. And so she never sat with me and said, you can coach in the NBA, but there was never anything in my mind that said that I couldn't do anything. And so I always, you know, think about what she would be thinking about this. I think she'd love our players. I think she'd be, you know, all about a Jaren Allen dunk or, you know, a Colin Sexton, you know, transition layup, no question. But more so, I think just to be able to have 3 on that jersey, you know, makes me feel that, you know, it's cool to be part of an organization that values women and to be in this role and hopefully be able to influence, you know, the girls and women that will come next after me.
You know, I might know somebody at Powerade. I might get you a ball with the wine and gold colors on number 3 so you can keep it in your office. And, you know, cause they're also putting the number in the bottles of the beverage. So how about you, Alisa? I know you have a very interesting story behind your number.
So I played volleyball growing up. I tried my hand at basketball because I grew up a huge Cavs fan. So basketball was always like my favorite sport. I did try it. Contact sports, not for me. So didn't really make it quite far in basketball, but I played volleyball growing up. And I was very, very small growing up. I didn't hit a growth spurt until I was in like 9th grade. So I played church league the first couple years, and we didn't really get to pick our numbers for that. But once I started playing organized sports in school, I remember, you know, in 7th grade, we would get like the pre-made jerseys that they had probably had for like 20 years at Brexel Robbie Heights Middle School. And me and the other libero, the runts, we all got to pick our numbers, but the numbers were by size. So like 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 were like probably XX small or whatever. So I picked 4, and that's kind of the number that stuck with me.
You should change the story to the fact that you were a fan of the Fab Five in Michigan and you wore number 4 because you love Chris Webber. That sounds so much better.
Come on, that's an adorable story. Don't throw it.
Another great wearer of number 4 is NBA champion Amon Shumpert. So,
but you know what's great?
To be in that company.
You know what's great now, for even for girls growing up now, they're going to have a lot more to pick from now, because before, most of the women that excelled, I was looking into it, they were all either on one-on-one sports like tennis players or Olympians. And now you have a lot more than just what the women's soccer, the national team, has been able to do, and the WNBA, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of number 3s for Diana Taurasi now everywhere in the playgrounds, right, Lizzie? Because that's what I think is the growth we're going to see, where now somebody said you have to see it to believe it, you know, when they talk about Kamala Harris. Now you have a lot of little girls watching athletes that actually look like them and are like them.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it also shows that the more you put women on TV, the more they get coverage. The marketing happens after. It's not, you know, rocket science. I think the Sabrina Ionescu jersey for the New York Liberty sold the second day because she was covered at Oregon and people got excited, right? That's how you grow the game. Yep. But yeah, there's little girls watching Candace Parker and Sue Bird and, you know, the next generation of players coming up. And again, I love women's basketball and I love the NBA too. And I don't think it has to be an either or. Like, there are times that I'll be doing my scouting report and I'm like, okay, you know, the James Harden crossover reminds me of Kelsey Plum. And like, everyone's looking at me like I'm crazy because no one else really, but I just don't think it has to be one or the other. There's a lot of synergy between the games. And I think kids growing up should be able to emulate and follow who they want to. And when the people look like them, it's all the better. So I just think the WNBA is so important in so many ways.
How about you, John? Do you have a number? Do you have is there a story behind your number? Do you play sports?
What's that?
Do you play sports?
That's a little hurtful.
He was a mathlete.
No, I did actually better in four sports in high school, and I always wore 13. I don't know why that is, but I always wore 13. So that's I don't really have a story around it. But there you go.
I thought you said you were going to say
basketball. By the way, out of those four sports, basketball was a distant fourth. Just so we're all clear about that.
I feel that.
Distant fourth.
How about you, Wolfie? Do you have a number at Garfield Heights?
Yeah. I wore a number. Again, football was kind of my main sport. So I wore number 12 in football. And it was kind of like at that school, the number 12 before you kind of bequeathed it to you. You know what I mean? If there was a senior that you look up to, and he wore number 12.
So Terry Bradshaw had nothing to do with it.
Terry Bradshaw had zero to do with it. In fact, less than zero. Lindsay, we talked about that. Rafa going to the Final Four. You took Cal to the Final Four. Are you immersed in March Madness right now? Are you both men and women? Are you totally excited for it right now?
Totally excited for a lot of reasons. First of all, I think, you know, last year and the pandemic, there are certainly way more important things that we lost in terms of human life and all that. But I think for everyone, just not having March Madness was a kind of a gut punch last year. And then the second reason I'm like so into it is just I can just be a fan. You know, I was in it for so many years. I was on the bubble. I was, you know, a top seed, kind of every experience. But now it's sort of fun to actually be able to fill out a bracket, to be able to just watch like a fan. And so it's really cool on both sides. I think on the women's side, it's going to be one of the most exciting years ever, because you take away any home court advantage. So on the women's tournament, you know, without the pandemic, there's still home court seating and things like that. So I think we might see the most parity ever when you take that out of it. And then there's just no clear front runner in women's basketball. So I think that's gonna be really exciting. And then, you know, the men's tournament, just every year, it never, you know, fails with game winners and crazy moments. And it's really neat to be able to follow, and friends, you know, who are coaching in it and just follow like a fan. So I'm pretty excited.
And I'm not sure exactly who the field is in the women's bracket.
I think the draft today.
It's tonight.
The draw.
Election Monday.
Okay.
Yep.
But say you see Santa Barbara, Cal, and Brown are all in the tournament. Who's your allegiance to?
Oh, my goodness. That would be a great problem to have. Yeah. Because I don't think that's going to happen this year. And Santa Barbara men are in it. So I'll be rooting for them. But it's interesting. Like, I know you want like an easy, quick answer, but every part of your life, right, is like so meaningful in some ways. Like, we were actually just talking the other day on the bus. It was JB and Kevin Love and someone else of Dan Giroux. We're sitting there and we're talking about Santa Barbara, and JB's like, yeah, that was Lindsay's first job. And in thinking about that, like, there were so many important like coaching experiences I had, you know. So just because I didn't go to a Final Four with Santa Barbara, cutting down a net and winning the Big West tournament was like unbelievable, you know. Yeah. And obviously, you know, I didn't graduate from Cal, but it feels like home. And then, you know, Brown is where I kind of began this whole coaching journey. So I would be thrilled ever if those three were ever in the tournament together. I know that's a kind of a cop out answer, but
you know, the first time I ever did the Final Four, I almost got thrown out at the end because they left the ladder but under the basket, and I wanted to take a picture of myself like I was cutting the net, and of course I had security right on top of me.
Of course.
But you did get the photo.
Yeah, you got the photo.
You did get the pick.
I am rooting for Cleveland State, so, you know, I feel obviously attached to Cleveland. Dennis Gates is a great friend of mine. He is a Cal grad. So I was giving Damian Dotson a little hard time last night because he's a Houston guy. So I told him, sorry, you know, Cleveland State at the 15 seed, going to give Houston some problems. You know, we have always some good trash talk amongst the staff and people's allegiances.
That's my school. Concrete State, baby.
Yeah.
I was hoping they got anybody other than Houston. Houston is the one team in that out of those two seeds that, I mean, I know Ohio State's there. We wouldn't have wanted that to happen.
Anybody but Ohio State.
Anybody but Houston, and sure enough, that's
there you go.
Good luck to the Vikes, no question.
Yeah. Absolutely. Lindsay Gottlieb, we want to thank you so much for coming on Women's History Month and Women Who Rock Night.
Yeah, baby.
On Wednesday night, St. Patrick's Day against Boston. Against the Celtics, let's get a win for that night. What do you say, Lindsay?
That would be amazing.
Yeah,
that's always the plan. So hopefully, that's the most important thing. So we'll channel the power of the women of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse and try and get a win against the Celtics.
Amen.
All right.
And Alyssa Dombrowski, thank you so much for being our co-host today.
Thank you, my friend. It was my first time. I'm usually behind the camera, so how'd I do?
You did great. You always do great.
Ohio State and Michigan playing. Who do you root for?
I'm not entertaining you asking questions like that anymore. I am an Ohio State alum, Rafa, so we cannot have this conversation. No Bucks. I'm in the Big Ten tournament, but I have faith.
Ladies, thank you so much for coming on and joining us on Wine and Gold Radio. It was a pleasure having you. Okay, that was our special guest, assistant coach Lindsay Gottlieb and Alyssa Dombrowski, the great AD. You know, she should get hazard pay for having to put up with her dad at work all the time. I don't know if she makes enough money for that. But
I'm pleading the fifth on that one.
I'm allowed to break Dave Dombrowski's chops all I want. It's the beauty of this job.
No comprendo.
We have to say a couple things before we get out of here. Robert J. Hageman. We're going to start with him today.
Okay. Big wrestling fan, by the way.
Robert J.
WWE, yeah.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah,
and he's guy. Built like a wrestler. He could probably slam me. Yeah. He'd put you in a figure four leg lock you'd submit in 2 seconds. Matt Gold, the Golden Boy. Gotta love the Golden Boy. Joe Magner. Peter Borman. Joe Fritchin. Casey Coolis, the coolest name in broadcasting. D-Mac. The hardest working man in show business. You know it, I know it.
No comprendo.
Come on. That dude kills it. Lucy Veras, you know her. She's
yes,
the best.
Mrs. Veras, of
yes.
course.
And, of course, the dynamic duo of Dirty Kurt and Marty Allen.
Let's go, Big Daddy.
Oh, yeah. So we'll see you next week. And as always, good night, Freddie Mac, wherever you are.
The catch, corner, shoot, fire. Score! Ah! Take that, Chicago!
You're listening to Wine and Gold Radio.
Snyder sideline left. Snyder on the dribble drive. To the hoop. Put it up. Goal!
Fires to LeBron. Three ball in the air. He hit it! He hit it! He hit it! Cavaliers win!
America.
D'Lo looking. Fires to Doherty. Back to Wheelo. The three.